Log Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Welcome, everybody. Happy Monday. The kids are back in school. Happy back to school day, parents. This is National Parents Holiday. You know that. I was singing this morning, sending mine off to school. All right. We've got us first and foremost. Thank our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for being here another day, because you know tomorrow isn't promised to anybody. This world is crazy. So I want to say thank you, Lord, for allowing me to be here. I want to say thank you. We are now at 11,358 people listening. Don't know where you guys are coming from. I do know where some of you are coming from. So thank you very much to all of the young people and the older people in the community of Springfield Gardens, Queens, and New York, New York, that has interacted with me and given me your feedback, some topic ideas. I want to thank you very much to the young people that I have been swirling around with this past week. And over the weekend, tonight's topic was something that came up with every single one of you, a little more. And we touched on this situation before, but we're going to do it again tonight to add on a little more facts for those of you who haven't gotten the message yet. So before we do that, let's shout out our sponsor and our show's consultant, Mr. Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 Kiss FM, currently with iSoulRadio.com. You can hear Mr. Barry Mason do his magic twice a week now, on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m., on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. You get the best of R&B, classic soul, dance, R&B, rap, anything that you like, he's got it going on for you. He's also the CEO of Track One Entertainment. Track One Entertainment brings you those great grown and sexy R&B events all over the venues of New York City and Brooklyn. And speaking of, on Wednesday, September the 18th, we have another event at that great venue that we had last month. This time it's featuring the group Double Exposure. It will be at the Brooklyn Terrace. You can either hit myself, Katie Barnett, up on Facebook, or you can hit up Barry Mason himself, and you can find out how you can get tickets to be a part of this event. All right, my New York team, where are you? Because we need you to come hit me up, because I want to see you there and have some fun that day, because it's never disappointing. Okay, to Stephanie Hammond, to Let, and Marcia Morgan for the things that you do and allowing us to be a part of your team, some consultancies and things to that effect. Thank you very much. To my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, to Monster Miles, to our honorary and regular panelist, Deacon Zeddy Williams. Thank you very much for all that you do to contribute to this and to help our children and adults and communities hear what this show is about. All right, guys, you know how we do this. Early morning topic, early commercial break. It's the happiness of the school, the first day of school, guys. Just hang with me. All right, before we go into our break, we're going to be talking tonight about teen violence once again, okay? And Till Death Do Us Part is the name of tonight's topic. And that's because a lot of teenagers are getting into relationships a lot earlier in their age and a lot more frequently. The relationships these days is nothing like they used to be. Young love is not so innocent anymore. Teen dating, domestic violence, teen violent relationships are on the rise, people. Our children are in danger between themselves, as well as what society is offering. And hearing some of the things that I heard from the youth themselves, both ends, both that have been abusers and those that have been abused, those that have been able to say something about it and survive and speak up, and those that were not so fortunate. Tonight's topic is for you, once again. So what I'm going to do is go into break. I'm going to take it to go out with Cher Lloyd, Want You Back, and when I get back, we will get this topic started, okay? So I will see you back here in about 3.5 minutes.
and them with her. Remember all the things that you and I did first? Yo, remember all the things that you and I did first? And now you're doing them with her. Remember all the things that you and I did first? You got me like this.
Now, back with more On The Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On The Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. That was Cher Lloyd. Love that girl. Love that song. And that's for my teens that asked me. So for those of you that's up past your bedtime, tonight's topic is for you. So listen in as long as you can, okay? On our previous show, we read a poem written by myself that was called I Love You to Death. This is a follow-up of that show, and I need to, it saddens me to hear and see the way that everybody in the young world nowadays has become so absorbed with image and with bad self-esteem issues, and they're taking the wrong way to resolve these issues. Now, teens, I want you to understand that we adults, we're not born adults, okay? So we know what it's like to be at that awkward stage. Now, granted, there's a lot more going on in your day and age, a whole lot more going on. There is technology that's involved. There's less two-parent homes. You don't have the extended family support in a lot of cases. And everything that used to be is being cut from you, and we understand exactly what all of you have told me over the weekend, including a lot of adults. So I would like for all of you to really listen in and try to see if by the end of this broadcast, we could become a little more empowered and try to make a difference. Small differences. It takes baby steps to make the giant ones, okay? Think of this as we're all toddlers learning to walk in this situation. But if we don't do something, if we don't get this together, we're going to lose our children to more than just society. We're going to lose them to death, literally. Okay? Some misguided boy putting his hands on his girlfriend, some misguided girl putting her hands on her partner, and vice versa. Some misguided child believing that because of what they see in the streets or because of what they feel is no longer available for them, this is what it's supposed to be like. Love is not meant to hurt, not as an adult, and certainly not as a child. Okay? Children at 14 technically should not be having relationships. Children at 14 shouldn't be having relationships. You guys don't have a clue how to handle yourselves, let alone a partner or be a committed partner. For that matter, commitment is not something that 14-year-olds are supposed to be settled in on, except for little things. You're supposed to be going around looking for the most expensive thing you can ask your parents for, probably get about 3 or 4 no's, or an absolutely not. And you're supposed to change your mind when the next level comes up or the next upgrade comes up. That's what you should be doing right now. You're supposed to be mimicking some star that you want to be like when you grow up because you haven't grown up. Now, what saddens me is that the face-to-face surveys that I did with this group of people, I don't believe any of you told me that you were even as old as 15. I'll give it, I think I spoke with 1 or 2 of you that were 15. And I'm thinking back to when I was 15. Now, all the awkwardness, the nerdiness, the unpopularity or the popularity, the mean girls, the jock boys, all of that existed from the beginning of time. It may not have been in, you know, Mike Jordan's. It may have been in feather moccasins at the time that were a certain way, and if they weren't. But either way, the rules of the game haven't changed, just the players and the board pieces, let's say. Too many people, too many young people are out there right now believing that the way they find love is to be involved with somebody who shows too much jealousy when they walk away, who tells them that, you know, I love you and I don't want to see you in makeup. Meanwhile, did you forget that you were wearing makeup when you met this person? Did you forget that there were certain ways you dressed when you met this person? Now, granted, you know, if you're with somebody and they don't want you dressing too flashy or showing your body too much, that might be a good thing, but how are they presenting that to you? How are they allowing you to use your cell phone or not? Ask yourself if before you met that person, did you do a whole lot more socializing? Did you go out a little more? Were you smiling more? Because if the answer is yes to that question and no to that, you're doing it now, you have some evaluating to do. There are plenty of cases that has been going on right now where teen domestic violence didn't end in the person getting away. As it stands right now, the latest dating abuse statistics is that 1 in 3 students or adolescents, 1 in 3 are abused by their partners, by their boyfriend. And do let me make it clear that it's not just the boys that's abusive. Well, that might be the majority of it. Because no matter how skinny they are, boys are generally designed to be stronger physically than women. But there are abusive females out there. Make no mistake about it. Make no mistake about it. There are abusive females out there too, be it verbally, be it physically. Abuse is just not limited to the hands. It's just that the physical abuse winds up taking lives. 1 in 3 adolescents is a victim in the United States of physical, sexual, emotional, or verbal abuse from a dating partner. Okay? And this is a figure that far exceeds the rates of other types of youth violence. Now, that's sad. Domestic dating abuse in teenagers is the highest form of abuse or crimes or violence among teens. Ask yourself if your relationship, be it ever too early to have one, at 14 and 15 years old, are you one of the statistics that was counted in this? Are you one of the descriptions of the statistics that they took, whether or not you were a direct focus of the study? Have you found yourself being a little more at odds with your parents than you were before, a little more normal than the average teen? Have you found yourself feeling like you want to tell somebody something, but you know what? You're a little more afraid of losing what you feel is the only thing you have to yourself, which is your abusive person in your life. Because it doesn't take an expert to know that that's just not common sense. And sometimes your heart makes you do things, oh my Lord, it makes you do things so silly, things you regret later down the line. But at 14 and 15, what you should be regretting by the time that you're 24 is not that you were in a relationship with the person that you couldn't get out of and you were being beaten or physically abused or, you know, sexually abused or told that you weren't going to be nothing or told that you better not go anywhere. But you were for coloring your hair blue or spiking your hair with red and yellow or how you and your girlfriends or you and your guy friends used to sit on top of cars and try to be dangerous. That should be what your silly regretful moments are. For you to have to sit back by the time that you're 18 years old and say to yourself, I regret being in a relationship with the person that put their hands on me. Oh, my God, I dodged a bullet because you know what? This person nearly killed me. And consider yourself blessed because there's a panelist that comes on the show that lost a person that was very dear to him to domestic violence, and she's now the victim in a high-profile murder case out in Ohio. Beautiful, promising young career she had. Beautiful girl. Love doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't cost you your limbs. It doesn't cost you your pretty face. It doesn't cost you any bodily harm. Love is not supposed to make you feel like you're chasing or you're stalking or you're running for your life. That is not love. That's a lie. That's possession. That's somebody who's in dire need of filling a void in their lives, and they're doing it on your back. Let's go down a little further in these statistics. And by the way, you can access this information at a website called loveisrespect.org. And you can see it is called Dating Abuse Statistics. When you get there, you read this and you tell yourself and ask yourself if it's just you and the room. You don't have to tell this out loud if you feel ashamed. You just ask yourself and then make decisions for yourself, because the honest to God truth is, if you're that close to a situation and you're that determined to hang on to a situation, even if you know deep down inside it's not good for you, no amount of love from the outside, no amount of warning, no amount of pushing is going to take away your decision to stay where you're at. It's going to be you that's going to have the trigger. And you know what? Be careful, because that by the time that you and sense and sensibility hook up, it might be too late, God forbid. You might be in a situation where now, where it was just maybe one little gum shoe, one little gum piece under your shoe, now your whole entire ankle is sucked in quicksand and you're trying to get out with a rope. The question that they ask next is, why should we focus on young people? Girls and young women between the ages of 16 and 24 experience the highest rate of intimate partner violence, almost triple the national average. Young people, did you hear that? Triple the national average. And that's talking about adults who experience domestic violence. Adults who's gone through the crazy stage and got to grow up and be smart about it or regret the right way. Triple the national average are the young people getting beat up or abused in some way by somebody they picked to be their partner. Next bullet under this category is violent behavior typically begins between the ages of 12 and 18. 12 years old begets violent behavior. 12? The severity of intimate partner violence is often greater in cases where the pattern of abuse was established in adolescence. About 72% of 8th and 9th graders are dating. There are more very young preteen and adolescent relationships forming, being abusive, and ending. Usually, you start thinking about the many boyfriends or girlfriends that you dated or flung out of fling with or actually dated for a little while by the time you're in college. And that's usually when you start settling down and start thinking about, you know, a goal for the future of your life. Carla, I see you there. I just need to read off these last few statistic highlights, and I'll bring you in. Now let's talk about, my dear teens, the long-lasting effects, the things that you don't see that we will be dealing with later in life after the situation has come to a halt or you've gotten out of it by the skin of your teeth. Long-lasting effects. violent relationships in adolescence can have serious ramifications by putting the victims at higher risk for substance abuse, eating disorders, risky sexual behavior, and further domestic violence. Being physically or sexually abused makes teen girls 6 times more likely to become pregnant and 2x as likely to get an STI. Sexually transmitted infection. Half of the youth who have been dating, who have been victims of both dating and violence and rape, attempt suicide, compared to 12.5% of non-abused girls and only 5.4% of non-abused boys. Now let's talk about the stuff that needs to change, and adults that are listening, this is something that when we spoke on all the previous segments about everybody's mumbling in the corner and no one's saying anything about getting into your local councilwoman, city officials, but this is the thing to do because these facts right now are disturbing. Dating violence and the law is the category. 8 states currently do not include dating relationships in their definition of domestic violence. As a result, young victims of dating abuse often cannot apply for restraining orders, nor will they decide that it's a wise thing to tell anyone. Never mind the fact that teens already are protective of their abusers because they'd rather rebel against their parents and keep the person that they feel gives them the escape they need. So they're already going to make a stupid, immature choice, as they should be making at that age, by not telling it and forgiving this abuser more than once or twice. But now, with the law, when they would decide to go and say something, there are states that don't even recognize teen dating violence as a domestic violence situation. Next. New Hampshire is the only state where the law specifically allows a minor of any age to apply for a protection order. More than half of the states do not specify the minimum age of a petitioner. Currently, only 1 juvenile domestic violence court in the country focuses exclusively on teen dating violence. So now we have these established facilities and laws and these protocols, and you know what? Everybody's focused on what? On the adult crimes. Everybody's focused on business, on politics, and meanwhile our youth are slipping through the cracks. My teen listeners, those of you that I spoke with, those of you that are listening in right now, listen to me very carefully. Just because it's not in your face on the surface doesn't mean there aren't options. You talk and you tell and you walk away. And if you're having a hard time walking away or shedding the person you no longer want to be involved with, you look for help, because that's not something you're going to be able to do on your own. And by all means, pray. The lack of awareness is another problem of our children and our adults, actually. Only 33% of teens who were in a violent relationship ever told anyone about the abuse. I just spoke on that. 81% of parents believe teen dating violence is not an issue or admit they don't know if it's an issue. Which means parents are not aware of what their children are involved in, or they're not reading signs, or they're probably too aggravated to deal with the constant mouth of a teenager, because believe me, there's been days that I've thrown up my hands when my teen has come at me quite a few times, but then you have to take a break and go back right back to it. Because the day we give up, the day that we say forget it, do what you want, that's it. It's over. Or 67% of our teens don't tell anyone. 81% of their damn parents don't believe that teen dating violence is an issue, or they admit they don't even know if it's an issue with their child. And finally, in the lack of awareness area, a teen's confusion about the law and their desire for confidentiality are 2 of the most significant barriers stopping young crime victims of abuse from seeking help. First of all, that right there is going to be a future show, because it goes back to government interference with certain things. Because now our already confused teens who decided to be grown and go take on relationships that they couldn't possibly understand how to deal with all the contents that come with it. Now what they want to do is they're going to try to go and try to get help, but because they want to remain confidential or because they don't know how to ask for help and because the law is confusing to them, they won't go. So they'll suffer in silence. And they won't go to their parents, because if they're fighting with their parents, because all teens do, they're going to feel ashamed, because they're going to feel their parents are going to say, I told you so. And guess what, teens? If they do, so what? Better you get an I told you so from your parents and get your life saved and get back in track where you should be than have your life taken away. Because I can guarantee you that after your parents say, I told you so, after they get a little upset by the shock of the news, they're going to hug you and they're going to be by your side. They might be a little strict on you later. They might watch you a little harder. But better they watch you and have your back than you are out there on your own trying to handle grown things that does not apply to you. Because by law and by God, you are not prepared to do a damn thing in a relationship at 14 years old. I'm going to bring our callers in right now. Welcome, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, James. Lady Diamond, how are you?
Hi, Lady Diamond. 1 second. Let me bring in our other panelists.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the On the Edge show, caller.
Good evening, ladies. How are you? God bless you and your family.
Hi, God bless you. Welcome, Deacon. This is Deacon Zeddy. Lady Diamond. Okay. Deacon, you were the first one that called in.
Say again, you sound a little muffled.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. If you've been listening in, tell me what's your take on tonight's subject.
Well, you know, it's I take it kind of real personal because I lost a few young people to violent death, and one was my niece, who was 19 years old, was killed by her boyfriend, by her ex-boyfriend, who was shot to death. She was a promising young lady, was going to school for law and for dance. She had worked on 106 in Park, and her life was just taken away from her because this guy just couldn't deal with not being wanted by her anymore. And if you have to forgive me, because I'm feeling a bit under the weather this evening. So, but I just had to call in a comment and try and reach out to some of the young people out here to let them know that if you're in a relationship that you are being physically abused, and you're keeping it from the people that really love you and care about you, you need to talk to someone, even if it's not a family member or just a close friend that you can have as a confidant to tell somebody. Somebody needs to know before it's too late and you lose your life.
Amen.
It's a very serious situation, because you have a lot of these so-called young men don't have any regard for another life. So I'm just pleading with you to talk to someone within your family or somebody that you feel like you can go and talk to. Let somebody know.
Thank you very much, Deacon. Please, if you're feeling up to it, stay with us. And Elaine, your turn.
Well, this is what everybody should know, you know, teenagers, adults, everybody, what they should know is that if you don't know you're in an abusive relationship, take a step back and look at the situation at hand, you know. If your partner is always grabbing you in a certain way, hitting you, you know, even if it looks like it's play fighting and it just seems a little bit too much, if they force you to do something that you don't want to do, yeah, that's a part of abuse. You know, if they tell you not to talk to certain people, they at least pull you away from what you're used to doing in your life. Like if you're used to, you know, playing chess or checkers or drawing, and they stop you for what you have to do, you know, it's abuse. If they tell you to stop talking to your certain friends or your family members, and it pulling away from your whole life, yes, is a part of abuse. And that's certain things that not everybody sees or understands, you know, what abuse is. They'll think, oh, okay, no, you know, my boyfriend, my girlfriend's telling me not to, you know, not to talk to these people because they're bad for me, even though I've known them for so many years and they weren't. You know, they don't know that that's part of the abuse process. It starts very small, and then to the point that that person knows that they have their partner in control for them to, you know, just to get to the next level. You know, and that's something that nobody notices it. They just let it go. Oh, it's cute, it's cute. Oh, he's following me around. He's, you know, pushing me around. He hit me, or he bit me, or she, you know, she punched me, whatever. Or, you know, she loves me, he loves me. And it's just like it's the beginning phase of abuse, and they just don't see it until it's already too late.
That's what's scary, because when I spoke, I've been, as you know, Elaine, I've been going around and doing some random interactions with the youth and with the community, pretty much trying to get into the minds of the people in these communities. I found this common vibe. And I'm going to tell you this. I don't know if both of you agree, but it seems that nowadays the youngest of kids finds it like a trend to say that they're in a relationship, be it one that's homosexual or be it a heterosexual relationship. That's the first thing I found, that it's a trend. Then I'm finding more along the trend, but they are finding it like a stripes and badge of honor type thing to say that they got their girlfriends under control. Or their domestic partner's under control. You know, I got her in check. She knows she better not go nowhere and do this and do that. And this obviously is coming from something that they've seen from older people and feel that it's cool. Or for whatever lack of self-esteem or fulfillment they have among themselves, they do it on the back of someone who loves them. Because, you know, a lot of times, people who are not into love for love. And at 14, you don't know what the hell love is. Let me explain this to you. All right? At 14, you love yourself, you love music, you love yourself. Okay, I'm hearing like a lot of feedback in the back. But at 14, you don't know what love for another person is like. Your life is very, very out of the womb of it. Taking on your own responsibilities about yourself and learning how to deal with your identity crises and the things that you're hit with, the lack of support in the modern-day society, all of these things, and, you know, that's hard enough. The teenage years, even for our day, was crazy. You know, your bodies are changing, your voices are changing, you're starting to see things one way, you're told you can't like the things that you used to like as a child. Nowadays, that saying about put away your childish things, that has a whole new meaning. It has a whole new meaning. And these children, without any real adult structure or any opportunities to, like we talked about with the removal of the arts in schools, they have nothing anymore. So what's left is themselves. What's left is themselves. And to teach themselves and to play house and play doctor and do all the things that they would have done if they had a structured of upbringing, okay, if they had more people getting in their neck and being a little more nosy about certain things, yes. But at the same token, we also know we're in a different society, so getting as involved as the neighbors in our life is not the same anymore. I think that our previous panelist, my Brother Charles, spoke about how people are afraid for their life. But we're not talking about reporting a crime. We're talking about looking at a girl that had used to be happy-go-lucky and now she's withdrawn. We're looking at a girl that seems to love this person she's with, but at the same time there's a look of deep fear in her eyes whenever she's around them or moves away. If you start seeing somebody cringing at the sound of the person they're supposed to love's voice, something's wrong there. And teens, I'm going to put this out there. Ask yourself two questions. Before you met the person that you love, were you happier? Were you freer? And now that you're with that person, how do you act with your girlfriends? Do you hang out with the same girlfriends that you used to? Do you have to ask permission to go to a store? Do you scrub the makeup off your face when you used to wear makeup before you met the person you're with?
Can't hear, can hardly hear you.
Okay, 1 second. How about now?
Yep, I
hear
you.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
All right, I'm sorry.
You're muffling out little by little.
All right, what I was saying to the teens that's out there, since you didn't hear, and I do want to repeat this, ask yourself 2 questions. Now, mind you, the National Domestic Violence people, they have a list of questions to ask yourself. But let's just ask these 2. Before you met the person that you decided you want to hook up with at 14, were you freer before you got with them? Did you have fears like you have now? Does that person act like everything that they loved about you before you said yes to them is a problem now? That's the first question. The next question is, do you find yourself being afraid to make a move without asking this person? I didn't say feeling that you want to respect the person and get their input. I asked, did you feel afraid to make a move without asking, not be afraid of your parents, but being afraid of the person that you think loves you or you love? Love is not supposed to hurt. Love doesn't take your life. It doesn't cause you a scar on your face. So I'm going to ask you to ask yourselves that. Now, one of the things that upset me, I think, most was I was hearing one of these very young girls, and actually she said she was 14, but if I looked at her, she looked more like she was 12 or 11. And she was like, oh, no, I can't because, you know, so-and-so is so jealous. And she thought it was cute. She had that with a smile on her face. Sal, you know, if I go out there, he's going to be, what? That's the type of fear you're supposed to be having when you hear that your father's coming down the block.
Mm-hmm.
Or your mom. At that age. You kidding me? And so those of you just joining in, I'm going to repeat a little thing I said earlier. Your parents were not born adults. They're not as far removed in understanding what you're going through as you think. And for those of you who don't know, I suffered abuse at the hands of people that I loved very much. So I'm sitting here as a walking survivor of things that should not have allowed me to walk. I've been a victim of abuse of all types, and I will tell you that now that I'm free and clear, my mind can actually look back and accept the fact that I was a victim and I was not a person just being in love that was having some problems with the partner in my life. And let me tell you that it affects everything about you well into your adult age. Which is why this show is on the air with the 2 wonderful people that join us, because we all have stories we can share. Elaine, you deal with girls on a softball team.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what are their ages?
Well, I have 3 age groups. I have girls from ages 10 all the way up to the age of 19.
Okay.
A huge one.
Tell me something. Do you see, I'm asking you this because I do want to talk about one of the things that I'm going to ask you this. Like I said, you're actually one of the advocates that's involved with probably one of the few remaining extracurricular arts that are out there for children. So I'm going to ask you this. If you got girls to the ages of 19, they are a little older. They are a lot more, comprehensive of what goes with the relationship. But I'm sure that in the 15-year-olds and the 14-year-olds, you've got the young girls that's in there with boyfriends. Now tell me, being a part of this team, do they seem to be a little more sensible with the way they balance out their relationships and their sports? Or do you get the same type of distractions and, let's say, misguidance in these girls?
Well, depending, I mean, like, I could say, like, a few years ago, I had, like, a group of girls that, yeah, they had, like, a lot of distraction. And there are, I can say that a handful that I know that their boyfriend is like, they have to be there. Their boyfriend has to be there. It's like their boyfriend does not trust them to be at the football field or at the baseball field. I can feel alone, but there's a whole bunch of other boys around, and they're like prey, you know? They're like prey to the other boys around. So usually, you know, whenever I have my practices, I always tell my girls, listen, your boyfriend, good for you, but they're not allowed at any of my practices or my games. They're a distraction, and I don't want them here. And they know that. So it's like every time I see a boy, I'm like, who is he? Oh, he's my brother. I said, really, you don't have no brothers in your family. Who is he? You know, what? If he's your boyfriend, he's banned. He cannot come to these practices. And I did have a boyfriend, too, that they started arguing with me. Oh, you can't tell me what to do. I'm like, really? Okay, fine. I'll have the girls run laps until you are gone. So they're going to keep on running, and you're still here. You're going to keep on running until you are gone. And to the point that the girls will start running, and the guy was still arguing with me. I said, listen, you are a little boy. That's one. You're a little boy. You don't know any better. If you don't leave right now, these girls are going to get really angry with you for those who are interested in playing this sport, and they're going to come after you. So you have those two options, either get beat up by a bunch of angry 15-year-olds or to walk away, you know, still with your body intact, you know? Little by little, it's like the girls would start yelling at him and saying, listen, leave now or she's not going to let us stop running. And they leave. And this was like a few years ago. Now I don't see that many boys come around my practices because I guess they know better. And if not, you know, I had a boy that he would come to the field, they'll stand next to his girlfriend while my brother was hitting balls to the girls. They're fielding. So my brother's like, okay, he wants to stay there. Let him stay there, fine. He hit a good shot out into the outfield. He was talking to the girl. The girl told him, listen, leave me alone. I might get practice right now. Leave me alone. My brother hit a shot out to the outfield, and he hit the boy right in his ankle. And he started yelling at my brother. He said, you're not supposed to be there. Leave. She told you to leave. Take a hike. You know, so most of the girls that I had, they're very strong-minded. That's what I can say. But if there's any type of abuse or anything like that, I mean, they think I don't find anything out, but I do find things out because, you know, girls don't keep things to themselves. not all these girls can keep things to themselves. Once they find something out, it spreads out, and I find out sooner or later, or even earlier. You know, so if there's, like, any type of form of abuse, the girls, they do confront the girl, and they tell her, listen, get out of that relationship. It's not good for you.
Now, you see, that is a good option because, see, you are a person in these girls' lives that can be that village. Okay, and that is definitely something that these girls that I spoke with seem to lack. And there is a really big connection between the lack of parts, the lack of options, the lack of involvement with people that allows these, not just girls, because I'm not going to keep putting this just on the fellas. It's just that the fellas are physically, regardless how skinny or small or short, tall, that they are, God designed men to be physically stronger than women. And at some point in time, if you get a boy mad enough, it'll show. But the thing is, there are a lot of abusive girls out there, too.
Yeah.
Mainly with their mouth, mainly with their attitude, the way that they speak, you know, to the person that they so-called love, which already is a sign of their immaturity. Because when you're with somebody, you don't argue in public, number one. Don't set out to embarrass them or insult them in public. You're supposed to be their right hand. Which is why at 14 and 12, you don't get involved in relationships.
That's right.
It used to be young love was cute. You had a shy little look. You giggled. You turned red. You said certain things. You know, the first kiss was the biggest event in since the comets that came to Earth. I mean, you know, none of this is happening anymore because everybody's forced to be grown or everybody is being told that, Mom, you can't touch me because I'll call the police. You know, or you know what? Fine, you're just going to grow up. you're just going to grow up and be a nothing by teachers. You're being stereotyped by police officers. You're being stereotyped by the way that you dress. Forgetting the fact that all these people pointing those fingers did something as crazy in their day, which ever applied to that era. And that is the one thing that we adults are not doing. But back to this statistic here, where 81% of the parents of these victims are saying that either they don't believe that teens really know what it means to do domestic violence, or they're not even sure if their kid is involved in this domestic violence. Now, that's a problem. That's the problem. Hello, parents.
Yes. Yes, it is. I'd like to comment on one thing.
Sure.
It really bothers me to hear in today's society. I know when I was coming up with, I have an older sister that's 7 years older than me, and I call her my big brother. I had two other sisters other than her, but they're younger than me. But when it came to my mother and father, at 14 years old, you better not be talking about no boyfriend. What boyfriend? What boyfriend? You better be talking about something out of school books or something. I mean, today's society are accepting of a lot of things that shouldn't be accepted in today's society, but it is anyway, because a lot of these parents are dropping the balls. They're really not parents. They're trying to be their friends instead of their parents. Friends and parents is just like you got oil and water. They don't mix. You have to stand firm as far as being a parent and let them know just where their limitations are. And a lot of these young people that are coming up, they have no limitations. And we have to get back to the basics and show them the right way, because that's what God blessed us with them for. When we have the honor to have children, that's a gift from God, and we're supposed to raise them in the right way and show them the way they should go, and that's not being done a lot today. A lot of these so-called parents are out here trying to hang out with them. They're trying to drink with them. They're smoking with them and whatever, and that's really sad. It's really sad the way the society is going now, and everybody's so accepting of certain things. And there's a lot of things, like even now today, that I'm not acceptable with some of my grandkids. But I look at some of their parents, like they get upset with me if I say something to them. And it's like, wait a minute, I didn't raise none of you like that, and so I'm supposed to let you raise them the same way? You know, it's not acceptable to me. And it's a lot of society now that needs to start saying no to a lot of stuff and stop letting them think they can get away with a lot of things.
And stop mingling with them. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Friends and parenting doesn't mix. It's all right to be a cool parent that can hang and, you know, the kids' music, and you can laugh and joke and, you know, do all these things. But there comes a point in time where your foot needs to be down. Or
yeah.
Up somewhere, depending on what
situation.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just, as you remember, Deacon, Elaine, you weren't in on this one, but the last segment that we had where we were talking about the NIMBY disease, you know, where the other panelists had said that nowadays it's not that he doesn't think people don't care, but he believes that it's just a matter of fearing for your life. Well, there are certain things that don't require you walking up to a person and going, hey, put that gun down. Nobody asks you to do that, you know, or pretend that you're Kung Fu James. You know, this is not what we're talking about. What we are talking about is things like this. You see a child that you've known since a baby, that all the way up to the age of 11 or 12, they used to run around and be happy and frolic and happy-go-lucky. And then you turn around, okay, and you see that this person now is keeping their head down or his head down, or they're in corners now. They don't want to get involved anymore. They don't have the same vivacious spirit they once did. Hello. Invite them over for cookies or pop or whatever it is that people do nowadays. And get to the bottom of it, because that you might be the one person that substitute for the parent they feel they can't tell this to.
Correct.
But adults, I will tell you this, you are at some point, if you do decide to get involved that way, are going to have to explain to this child that this is a big situation, and while I'd love to be your confidant, at some point you're going to have to talk to your parents. Now, I would love to be there with you. Because your parents are not as mean or, you know, bees as you think. at the end of the day, and trust me, I'm a parent of many, as much as we yell and we scream and we get upset, and we might even call you a couple of names in our frustration because we're upset or we're frustrated or we don't know how to reach you anymore. We might say we want to give up or we're leaving you or shipping you off somewhere. But at the end of the day, everything about you is precious to us. It's bad enough when you walk out the door, even if you don't do anything at all, somebody else's nonsense could take your life in a split second. That's why every time we open up the show, we thank God for another day to be here, because we don't know what could happen. So we already have to deal with that fear, praying over you as you go to school or go to the store. But to know that you're involved in a situation, possibly because you thought it was one thing and you were ignorant of the other, maybe because, you know, you think that a guy who finds you jealous is going to, Cora, I see you there. I'll be bringing you in about 2 minutes, okay? Maybe you believe that when a guy, displays a real intense jealousy for you, that it's love. It's not, sweetheart. It's not. Lady Diamond and Deacon, there's another caller coming in. Let me have them join the panel. Hang on 1 second.
Okay. No problem.
Good evening, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, my name is Angela. I just started listening to your show. My older daughter, hi. My older daughter, when she was 8, became suicidal over being bullied at school. And when you see your child become distraught, not want to go to school, or there's sudden problems at school, even though the grades are good, you know, I think a person needs to be more involved. And
yes.
I ran into opposition at the school. I heard kids will be kids, she'll get over it. Well, my daughter didn't get over it, and she got assaulted even more. Ended up in a hospital, you know, where, you know, at that point she was physically hurt and she was suicidal, and she was only 8 years old. You know, this does happen in all different kinds of neighborhoods because it's becoming a mean society. I don't know if you've caught on to that, but
yeah,
it's become a more... Okay. That it really has. I'm just like, it's okay to be mean. When did that become allowable, permissible? I just don't understand that mentality in our society. When did that suddenly become okay? But she wasn't even released from the hospital until I took her out of the school, because the doctor said this, that she would not survive the school. Now think about that. Someone telling you that your child would not survive the school you put your child in. You know, so she's homeschooled even to this day, because it was a better choice for her. She actually is smarter than the other kids, and, you know, she can go to college now, and she's 16.
Praise God. Praise God.
Good for you, Angela. Good for you, Angela. And let me say something else to you. I was a PTA president at a school out here in Queens, New York. Okay, now overall in the PTA Association, I was actually involved for 4 years, twice as the treasurer, okay, and then I got reelected as the president for 2 years. Okay, I was involved with the inner thoughts of the teachers as well as the students and the interactions. And one of the things that I did, I went into opposition with the school quite a bit, not the school, specifically the leader of the school. All right, there was a couple of problems with that particular year at the time. First of all, she was in an inner city school, but she had no idea about inner city life. So that was one. The language barrier was another problem. You can't take on leadership of a land or territory and don't know the ways or the operations of that territory. You can't just sit there and go, hey, look at me. See, I'm the leader. And you know what? Mm-hmm. You never go to the principal to find out or to complain about what's going on with the student without having their teachers there. You know why? Because principals are not intimately involved with their students. They get third-party reports from the people who are there with your child. And good for you, because one of the things that this principal tried to do was to go against homeschooling. And United States does the same thing. And I say good for you. It was a better choice for you. I pray for your daughter. I pray for your daughter, because at 8 years old, there's no way in heaven or earth she should be experiencing that type of tragedy at all. Suicidal at 8 years old, she's supposed to be playing with Barbie dolls or still liking Dora or something. you know, and good for you. I commend you because I push for parents to come and say something at all times. And, you know, everybody listens and they mumble in a corner, but mumbling in a corner doesn't get any action done. So I commend you, Angela, for doing that. If you have the time, you can stay through the broadcast and offer your opinions throughout the show. But one of the things that we do advocate for strongly, while this is a community-based, you know, show, it's mainly for the youth and advocating for them because they're lost now. We grew up with parents who had extended brothers and sisters who were there when the parents weren't. We had nosy neighbors. We had respect for churches. We had respect for authority. Now the authorities are closing their doors and turning their backs or punching clocks and the problem is over. You know, they're as quick to wipe the sweat off their brow with the problems in the school and keep it moving to their safe home. And then it becomes something I said in the two previous segments called the NIMBY disease. I call it that. NIMBY, meaning not in my backyard.
Okay.
If it doesn't affect me, it doesn't affect me. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem because it's a community. And how is your daughter doing now?
Well, she's 16. She
wow.
has a Halliburton engineer that's mentoring her. She wants to go into engineering. She also wants to go into the Marines, which I'm not too happy about. But she's a tomboy, and that's where her heart and her passion is.
Oh,
she qualifies to go to college already for college algebra and freshman comp, but she doesn't do a lot of work on her own well, so I want to wait till next semester. And she's 16. And qualifies for college level classes. Even at 11, she was testing at a college level, sophomore college level for reading comprehension. I mean, she always tested well above, But because of what she went through, she had some scars, is a nice way to say it. And, you know, not that I handle her with kid gloves, she's exposed to reality. But for us, homeschooling was a good option. It let her flourish in the areas that she was very strong in, and we could work on the different areas that she was not so strong in. You know, Ron Paul now has a homeschool curriculum for those that are considering homeschooling, and it's free. Kindergarten through sixth grade is free. You know, just
wow.
to let you know, if you look it up, Ron Paul homeschool, you know, the man who designed that is Tom Woods. And I just spoke with him a couple of days ago. I give away homeschool curriculum now, and it's become a passion of mine to help others. I live in a state where it's very easy to homeschool. Pennsylvania, New York, and California, it is more difficult
right.
to homeschool in.
Yes,
it depends on
yes,
your state.
Yes.
Yes. Angela, I want you to say a great service at my team.
I can kind of hear you.
Can't hardly hear you.
One second. Hello? Let me see. It's mic problems. I'm sorry, everyone. Hold on.
All right.
How about now? Is it better?
Much better.
Yeah. Yes,
okay.
Better.
Angela, do me a really huge favor because it would honor me and it would honor my team. Lady Diamond, say hello. Okay.
Say
we
hello.
No, not you. Lady Diamond? Okay, I think I lost my co-host.
Yes,
sorry.
Hello, I'm here.
All right. Tell Angela hello and introduce yourself. She's my co-host, and she's part of this
okay.
team. At the end of the show, do you have a Facebook account?
I have a Twitter, and I have a Facebook.
Okay. My Facebook name is Katie Barnett, okay? It's K-A-Y-D-E-E, okay?
Okay.
My last name is B-A-R-N, like Nancy, E-double-T.
Okay.
Kindly do me a favor. I would like for you to friend request me. Just put a little message in because if I don't remember or know people, I don't really take friends. But
mm-hmm.
I want you to tell me about the free curriculum and what you're offering and where to go because there are a lot of parents who are choosing to do that because the schools are going so horrible now. And
mm-hmm.
they're being faced with opposition from, you know, the actual government pretty much as the government is allowing them to choose this as a method. But I want to be able to expand that because parents' choices for their own children are rapidly being taken away, and it's horrible. And I commend somebody like you that's trying to do something good for others because that's what we're trying to do here as well. And if you would please do that for me, friend request me on Facebook, my personal page. okay? Give me the information if there's any website links.
I'll be coming from Angela's homeschool. I have a homeschool page just for my homeschool endeavors. I also work in the area of vaccines, safe vaccines, without dimerazol.
Well, we also have a market page for people like you, entrepreneurs or people who want to do certain things in the community. We have free advertising and free listing, and we read you off every Saturday from 7 to 9 p.m., okay? But the website is there at all times for people to access and see. And I have people from all over the states that's listed with us. So I would like for you to allow me to add you on.
Sure.
Your people would do that. So I can do all of that when your friend requests me, okay?
And I sure will.
I appreciate that. And I'm glad your daughter is 16 and doing better, even with whatever she has to deal with, because it doesn't leave you. It really doesn't. Okay? But it's sad to hear that. Because, like you said, it is becoming a very mean and impersonal society. And the deacon, who's on the other panelist, he's an activist out in Toledo, Ohio, and the same thing's happening. If you're not a cell phone or a number, you're nothing nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, there's no more churches to go to at midnight when you're having a spiritual or mental conflict that you want to resolve. There's no longer people standing there to take you in, or any youth activities where you can go and, you know, get some structure. It's horrible. So this is what's happening. These children are left to their own resources. And as we speak about a lot, modern-day parents are younger than ever. Half of them are trying to hang with their children and not parent them. You know, others don't know or are busy working because they're single parents and they have to make ends meet. You know, so it's the children don't have what we used to have growing up.
I have a question. You know, because I think the culture, you know, the absence of language, it's the dumbing down of language, I think, that's caused some of the changes in our culture. How do you think that plays into what you're talking about?
Oh, definitely. I know the texting and the instant messaging talk is one thing. Nobody expresses emotions face-to-face anymore. No one is even arguing or breaking up or making up face-to-face anymore, even in a personal phone conversation. People are telling you how they feel through emoticons and smiley faces or, you know, sticking out their tongue. And you're right. One of the things I saw volunteering in the school was I was bringing a stack of book reports from the teacher to the office. And I looked at the top page of a fifth grader's report in this particular school, and this person wrote a full two-page report as if he was texting his friend.
Oh, no. I hear things like that. That doesn't happen in our home, but I hear those things.
I will say to your daughters, testing well on college levels and everything, kudos to you, Mom.
Thank you.
Kudos to you.
It has been busy.
No, I'm a mother of many, so I could tell you, and I'm doing it alone. So I could tell you I understand firsthand. Okay, I also have been through abuse of several levels, so I know what it's like to survive it and what you go through. And the bullying, I can't say I was ever bullied. I had too much of a mouth to defend myself.
Somehow I believe that.
Yes. I got tired. What I was an advocate for the underdog. I hated to see people who were weaker be picked on by people who wouldn't dare do the things they did to a weaker person to somebody equal or better. And that bothered me. I saw too many people who could help a poor person turn their back. That bothered me. You know, there's way too many things that's out there that could be an easy fix for a lot of people, but everyone wants to try to dangle a carrot in front of you, and that bothers me. So whatever I can do here, I try to do to empower people. You know, not just myself, I'm saying I because I'm speaking to you directly, but my team is highly involved, and that's where the show came from. And one of the things that we are trying to do is, with everything that looks like there's a no-win situation, we're trying to show them that there is a window somewhere. For every closed door, there's one crack in a window somewhere. And you managed to get your daughter past 8 years of it.
I have two children. You know, the other one was autistic, and they said she would never talk, and she wrote her first book at age 7. And, I mean, every 6 months I would hear this from the developmental pediatrician. Your daughter has autism. Your daughter has autism. You know, do not expect that much from your daughter, you know. You know, but I did expect much. The best thing you could do as a parent, the best thing a parent can do is to expect more of their child. Because if they don't, no one else will. And I want parents to hear that. If you do not expect more of your child, no one else will.
That's right. Exactly.
If that doesn't send shivers down your back, I don't know what will.
Absolutely.
Yes. You know, can I interject a little bit here?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. You know, in today's society, we have so many parents that are accepting with a situation where they feel like their children are labeled slow or artistic or whatever, and they want to drug them. I am definitely against that, because I feel as though if you're a parent and you really love your child, there's no way you would allow your child to be distributed any type of drugs to make them, oh my goodness, how can you, that's having them walking around like a zombie. You know, you're cutting off a very valuable sense of knowing anything. I mean, how could they possibly learn, and they're on some type of drug because they're saying that they have a ADT or something like that. You know, and they have a learning disability. Yes.
Okay.
They have a learning disability or something. But first of all, your child, the first basic starts at home. A solid foundation at home is where they first start to learn. And if you're a strong parent, you're going to make sure before your child is allowed to go into a school, believe me, you will have them very well prepared. And with today's society, you have some of these parents out here, it all depends on where you are, they're not educated themselves.
No.
And that's very sad. It's very sad because I wasn't raised in a house like that. I know my mother and father, it was like I couldn't even go outside and play unless they went over every inch of homework that I had when I got home from school. I mean, there was no playtime until the schoolwork was done. And it seems like a lot of people have gotten away from that. They seem like they want to just push their kids out of the house, get them to the school. It's like that's their break time. No, don't depend on those schools to teach your children where you should have gave them the foundation that they should have had before they even got into the school. As a matter of fact, the teachers should be in awe of your children, of how much they are knowledgeable of what they know now before they even got to school.
True.
That's
I mean, it's like the parents now don't realize what real work and sacrifice for your child is. They've gotten away from that. We all need to get back to the basics, a lot of us. But I commend you on what you are doing with your child and with your children, because I mean, you have done a wonderful job. The hand of God is definitely upon you. There's anointing on your life, and I really want to encourage you to keep doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
Angela, just before, Elaine, I know you had a question, so just give me 1 second. She had a question for you, Angela, but I do want to tell you this. I have a sister. She's more of a sister than a friend to me, okay? She has 6 autistic children, all right?
Oh, wow.
Went to this very public school that both she and I serve in the PTA together with, and everything that these federal officials could do to encourage her to put her child in a special ed class or to not expect much, she was the first person in that county that decided she was going to homeschool her children. They gave her every obstacle they could find in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day,
neglect
she
and all that, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because you know why they say that these are 2 federally accepted government ways to educate your child? But they don't make it fair for homeschoolers whatsoever. They don't. And I've seen it, and it disgusts me to no end, but they don't make it easy. They'll tell you, yeah, we give you everything, sure. But why is it that homeschool children can excel better than the people sitting in class, and yet their diploma is not considered nationally accredited? I don't know what the changes are now, but I know.
Well, I can tell you that the mm-hmm. colleges welcome homeschool children. That, you know, we do co-ops. We have our own transcripts. It's a little bit different today than, say, it was 20 years ago. So I don't know what time frame you're talking about.
This was in around 2000 and, let me see, 2006, somewhere down there. And I know that a lot of people, there are a lot of better changes. There's definitely the Homeschooling Legal Defense Association. I remember that.
Right, helps them,
and,
yeah,
they don't play, and I like that about them. They advocate strongly for homeschoolers and the choices that they make. And one of the things that I remember was after my sister had all of her friends, I mean all of her children, past school all the way up to 12th grade, they told her she still had to pay to get back into class in order for everything that she accomplished to be recognized. And that was unfair. There was one office, and this, I'm in New York, so there was one office that one person actually in an office in the district that was supposedly the hotline support for homeschoolers, the curriculum they were charging for. Whereas if you look at the comparison.
That's unheard of. There's the K-12 program, which is a free public school program, but you do give up a lot of rights if you go through the K-12 program, and that's in the 50 states.
Right. Wow. That's horrible. That's horrible. It should be equal support for both federally approved methods.
Is she
Why
a single
the,
mother?
She's no. She's married, and her husband is also autistic. So
okay.
She.
I assume he has Asperger's.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I would consider getting a membership with HELSTA and having them plead their case.
Well,
so that's illegal what they're doing. That is illegal what they're doing.
Yeah, it sounds illegal to me, yeah.
She's actually doing what you're doing, Angela. She's now a full-fledged advocate for homeschoolers as well out here. I believe she started the chapter or got involved with it and helped it evolve, but I'm proud of her because all six of her children were removed completely from the public school system. They are well-mannered. They have high extracurricular activities. Their socialization is wonderful. And
right.
One of the things, I did a previous segment on here. I will tell you when we connect on Facebook how you can access the homeschool segment that we did, and you can hear it if you like. But it's just ridiculous. You know, it's like they say that these are both federally approved, but they try their best to put up what they feel is better. Why? Because money goes back to the schools. Okay? I'm tired of hearing all these new school teachers saying that they need 500 supplies per child, yet they're getting funding for those things. So it's a lot of stuff that goes on in the public schools. And then there's this. Public schools have restrictions on how much they can say or do with your child. Discipline-wise, certain things they can't teach. So my feeling is that homeschooling has the benefits of parents being able to teach their child the way they want to. The children may feel more comfortable not being at odds with a person who might learn something quicker. Okay.
Well, in a nurturing environment, it makes a world of difference. And
absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, in my state, it's so easy to homeschool in my state. It's guaranteed by our state constitution in the state of Oklahoma. We have a number of people coming from the state of California moving to Oklahoma so they can safely homeschool their children. You know, and that's a drastic move. That is a drastic move.
Yeah. That's where you're located in Oklahoma?
Yes, it's one of the most friendly homeschool states that you can find. Maybe Texas might be a little bit friendlier, but it's guaranteed by our state constitution.
Okay.
You know, you don't even have to test here. I mean, that's a little scary for me, but you know, when I see some of the families that need curriculum, and I know they're not teaching their children, but my hands are tied.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if you're doing everything you can to lead a thirsty horse to the water, you can't make him drink it too.
Yeah,
that's true.
My co-host.
Go ahead, your co-host.
I'm sorry. Yeah, she had a question. She's been patient.
Sure.
Elaine, what did you want to ask her?
Oh, no, sure, answer my question.
Oh, okay.
So, from hearing the conversation where you guys were having, I mean, she clearly answered my question, where she's located. You know, you homeschooled your 8-year-old child, right? Or you homeschooled the one that who is autistic, right?
I have one that's 16. I have one that's 10 now. My youngest is the one that had full-blown autism. We're not just talking about Asperger's. We're just talking about headbanging, boo-flinging, you know, nonverbal autism.
But
then,
is your daughter or your son?
They're both girls.
Oh, they're both girls. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is she new or she does speak though, right?
She speaks now. Yeah, I got a rehab audiologist that was in my home 6 hours a week. I did my homeschooling around that. I would get up at 5 at night. I would wash the clothes in the tub just to save money. So I'm not a rich woman. So I could buy that manipulative that I thought could help stimulate her brain to get her to speak. And it was almost 5 years to the day that she had her vaccine reaction. She was officially taken off the autism spectrum completely. Not
that's
just a little bit, but completely put in the normal to gifted range.
That's a step up because not that many kids who are autistic have made it that far.
I know.
She has a diabetic daughter and an autistic son, and he's mute. I mean, he's mute. He's like maybe
that was my daughter.
He's
that
11
was
years old
my
right
daughter.
Now. He was 11 years. He's 11 years old right now, and the only word that he said was the first word that my daughter told him was purse or backpack. It was backpack. And it was like a huge thing. I said, I was telling my friends, said, listen, you should push him. You should have him go to a certain school that he goes to. But they haven't done anything. She hasn't at least reached the level of, having do speech therapy or anything like that. He's still mute. So all he does is take out, cards and show us what he wants to do. I'm like, okay, that's not enough. He should be able to speak. He's 11 years old. He should be able to say certain words. And he can't. He still can't to this day. I'm like, there has to be a way. She's like, oh, no, she gave up all hope. This is like 2 years ago. Now she
I can understand being burnout. The child's 10, you say?
11 now.
11. I can understand being burnt out because it takes a lot of energy.
It's a lot of energy.
A lot of energy to keep that structure up and the PEC system that you're talking about. Sometimes you can do it on an iPad, but if you can't afford an iPad, then you have to make the cards and keep that organized. And if the child has a fit and throws it everywhere, then you got to pick it up. And, there's just so many different obstacles. But early intervention is the key, and that's what I got for my daughter. And thankfully, we homeschooled where I could have the physical therapist come to our home, the rehab audiologist, the one that helped her with her manipulative skills, a lot of therapies. Both of my children have auditory processing disorder. They still have that. But that means that their comprehension level, their reading comprehension level, is through the roof,
Right.
We have a deficiency in one area. A person usually has overabundance in another. And that happened with my two daughters.
Right.
But talking about the school system itself, and it was formed in 1906, 1907 by Horace Mann, who had three daughters, who he incidentally homeschooled. Also, at the same point in time, our modern prison system was formed. And this is where I need people to listen here. There's a lot of correlations between our public school system and our public prison system. There's a lot of correlations. I don't know in your area of the woods, but on Fridays, we now have the early release day. And then prison has its early release system. Very much the same. I mean, if you think about it, it's very much of a socialistic system. And, there's nothing wrong with socialism as a whole, but is that really a good environment for a child to be nurtured and to learn the things that he or she needs to learn? Some children learn conceptually. The child that learns conceptually does well in geometry. To teach the child to add, you would say, 10's having a party, 4 wants to go. Who does 4 bring to the party? A 10? 4 brings 6.
Right.
It's a concept.
Mm-hmm.
You can teach algebra as a concept that way, too, by using a rectangle. These are things I've had to learn because my children think conceptually. They just think differently. And I don't think a public school allows for different styles of teaching. You know, I think the teachers are handicapped in that way. And some of them don't even have a clue. After they're institutionalized for so long, the teachers become institutionalized. And, you know, it's kind of a lost cause at that point.
Well, it's funny, Angela, that you said that. Now, there's a couple of things that in what you said in the last 5 minutes that I wanted to touch on. Number one, when it comes down to somebody telling you about your child, let me explain this to you. There is no better power than the power of a mother with her child. I got told, now, I have a total of 10 children. I'm raising 6 on my own right now. And I'm going to tell you that I got told with this little group here that 2 of my children were not going to make it, okay? I'm going to tell you that. The first one was a premature child that she was born 8 weeks too early, okay? She was. I was told she was going to be blind. I was told that she wasn't going to have motor skills. I was told that she may not be able to talk. She couldn't shiver. She couldn't blink. Okay, well, she was born 3 pounds, 10.6 ounces. She was born with at 15 inches. Now, considering she was premature, that's pretty good odds, you know, pretty good measurements. That was the first thing. Second thing is there were 8 babies that day, and I'll never forget it, all born premature. Okay, my daughter was only able to eat through feeding tubes at the time, and they were telling me to expect this, and I was like, no, I'm not going to expect anything, and I couldn't even stay in the hospital every day like the other parents because I had 2 younger babies, 2 older but young babies at home at the time. So one of the things that I did was I called every day, and the nurse that was there, she happened to have a personal attachment because she had a son that was also disabled and she was told that he wouldn't make it. So she sort of was my fill-in when I couldn't be there. She called me every minute. She told me everything I wanted to know. And one day, when after the doctor, the pediatrician, told me, your daughter will not be able to suck, she will not be able to blink, not shiver, she's going to be blind. Okay, and, you know, preemies like this don't really survive very well, so, you know, expect that the mortality rate is going to be pretty quick here. So I was like, whatever you say, listen, I believe in God, and I believe in my child, and I'm a mother that knows how to reach her beyond your books. Let me tell you something. Every other preemie that was born bigger than her that was there did not get to go home with their parents for 4 months. I got a call on day 21 of my daughter being there that I needed to come down and feed my child. Now, I didn't understand what that meant in the beginning, but it clicked to me about 2 seconds later. I said, wait a minute. You mean she's not on the feeding tubes? She said she is not on the feeding tube. She is sucking. She is shivering, and she needs a mommy to come down here and give her a warm bath. So that was
That's
the first
a good story.
My daughter is 15 years old. She is going to be a lawyer, okay? She's studying in one of the top schools out here right now. The only thing wrong with her is that she needs glasses, big whoop, and she's doing perfectly well, okay? That's one. Then I have a set of twins, okay? The last twin decided that he wanted to be difficult. I don't know if he got into a fight with his brother. You know, I don't know if he was in the womb, and they were both down at one time, and then I think he got mad because his older brother made it out first. So he decided to do everything he could do. We went breech. He grabbed his cord, stuck it around his neck, kicked his placenta forward. I'm under drugs, God knows what. And I was told he's not going to make it because, you know what, he's going to make you bleed to death. That's number one. Number two, he swallowed too much of this and that, that and this. Well, let me explain this to you. Oh, both of them were 6 pounds and 6'2", so they were pretty full. They were the first twins born full term and full size in that hospital in 15 years. So I will tell you that they told me he wasn't going to make it because he might have taken into an amniotic fluid, all sorts of stuff. Well, he's 6 years old today. He's 6 years old today, and he is, you know, doing very well. He's actually an advanced student. Both him and his brother, are excelling in first grade, and they're in the top class as it stands right now. 6 years later, after being told they wouldn't make it past the month. So I don't believe in anything. I myself was in a car accident at 7 months old, okay? I had a liver that was got punched a hole in by ribs. I was in it was a 4-way intersection, hit by two cars on either side. And my father was told that I would never walk or live. I had to get 54 stitches, a blood transfusion. I was 7 months old. Well, I'm 43 today, okay? So it's the power of a parent, and a parent that believes in God even more so.
Yeah.
So don't let a doctor who only go by books tell you about your child or tell you that your child is not capable of doing anything, because a mother knows how to reach her child when the world cannot.
Oh, yeah, my mother did it for me. My mother did it for me. Before I was dying, I'm a diabetic. I've been a diabetic for too long. All right, I was diagnosed when I was 6 years old. And the doctor told her I was sick, everything. I lost a lot of weight. And the doctor told her that she was an overprotective parent. And she didn't, that she doesn't know what she was talking about. You know, that I was losing a lot of weight. They were checking the old blood test, and they're like, oh, no, she's perfectly fine. And, yes, there was something wrong with me. And
well,
she had to take me to another doctor. She had to take me to another doctor just for them to confirm that there was something wrong with me. That I was a type 1 diabetic already, and I was close to going into a coma. And look at that. I'm 32 years old right now, and I'm alive. And every time my mother sees that doctor, she wants to run him over with a car or something. Because she didn't know what he was doing.
Okay, I think her call got dropped, but I'm sure she's listening. I'm going to take a little short break and see if she calls back during the break. And when I get back, guys, we'll continue the discussion. You guys have been intriguing and awesome, so I appreciate it.
You're fading a little bit, too. Y'all, there you go. There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Okay.
No.
Okay, I said I'm going to be taking a little break, and hopefully she'll come back because apparently she got dropped.
There you go again.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah, that's better.
All right. She will, she got dropped. She got dropped, and she'll probably call back. She was absolutely awesome, and I'm going to take a break. When I get back, we'll continue this, okay?
Okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, and teams, I hope you were listening, and I hope all of you that that heard our guest, and she shared her story, brave woman that she is, wonderful. I hope that everything, she's back, hold on.
I'm sorry, one of my kids unplugged the phone downstairs.
Oh, that's okay, Angela. Angela, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in 5 minutes, okay? So just hang
Thank
out
you.
With me, will you? Okay, 1 second. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going out with Paramore's Ain't It Fun, and we'll be back in 4 minutes.
All right.
Baby, now you're one of us. Ain't it fun? Ain't it fun? Ain't it fun?
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Tonight's topic is, excuse me, it is getting so bad out here. Sorry about that. Okay, we are speaking tonight on teen dating violence, and we are also speaking with our guest, Angela, and Deacon Betty Williams, our co-host, Lady Diamond. We're speaking now on also bullying that happens in school and all the things that make children feel down on themselves and the options that we have. Angela apparently is one of an activist for homeschooling, and she's had two situations, well, one with a daughter being bullied in school, one with a child that was predicted or diagnosed to her with autism, and she was told nothing would become of her daughter, pretty much, don't expect much, and she's speaking on the story. So I'm going to bring our guests back in our last 24 minutes of the show. Hi, Deacon. Are you with me?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, Angela. Are you back?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having
okay.
me.
Okay. You're welcome. And Lady Diamond, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. So everybody's back on board. Okay, Angela. I do want to thank you, you know, your first time in, and already you've made such a great contribution to tonight's discussion. And I commend you, because many parents should come forth. Many parents should be able to say either what they feel or what they're going through, what they've seen, and definitely share with society, period, that there's options out there. You're definitely advocating for one. Deacon Williams, you're out there consistently busy and staying above the society blockage. Lady Elaine keeps up community sports. So these are things that have been rapidly ripped away, rapidly, you know, put a stopper in the middle of or blocked for some reason, for whatever reason. And all of you have kept the importance of these things alive and well. So, Angela, getting back to you, commend you very much, because homeschooling, I think now, should be more of an option and a supported one nationwide, really, because I think the teachers are tired. Frankly, you spoke earlier, that was the other thing I wanted to touch on, that
yes.
your daughters learn conceptually, right?
Yes, they do.
I learned by relativity, okay? And the way what I mean is, I went to college at 40 years old, my first time. I was a single mom in a shelter at the time. I wrote my first book there, you know, not my first book, but the first one that got published. Let me just say that.
I
decided, you know, I wanted to make something better of my life, because I was now responsible for being the only example my children had, even though their dad pretty much was always on the go. But, you know, now it was really just them and I. So I decided that we were in a shelter. It had to be, you know, trifling on them, because if it was trifling on me, it was more so on them, you know, especially at the time my oldest was only 10. So one of the things that I did was I said, I'm going to go and do probably the hardest, silliest thing that somebody could do in this situation, and I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get a degree, and I'm going to show my children that despite physical circumstances, if you keep looking ahead, there's a way to do things. So one of the things that I did was I actually went. I got a 3.9 GPA in computer networking, and, you know, I did it. I managed my time. I had family time. I did everything. But while I was in there, okay, being 40, around 40 and out of school for some time, going back to the educational system and learning in a classroom, I was around a bunch of fresh out of high school 20-somethings. Okay, so things that the professor would say on the board was like, you know, water to them. But for me, it was French. Okay, and so I'm sitting there like, okay, well, let me try it this way, okay? So we were learning something in a computer programming class that is called C#, and one of the things that was in there was he was speaking about something called classes and objects. And I told the story, you know, before, but I don't learn some things straight the way that it's told. So I have to break it down in my head to things that I can relate to and that's familiar to me. And one of the things that I told this professor was, okay, listen, I'm the old lady in the group. I say it shamelessly, and I'm going to say to you that I don't understand this the way that you're saying it, but let me see if I got the basic point. So I said, I understand children, cleaning, cooking, music, dance, writing, okay? So these are the things I understand. So let me go to cooking. And I said, you said that classes is like the umbrella category and objects are the things that you will put in either of these categories. So I said, if I wanted to cook a lasagna dinner and I have everything except the lasagna noodles in itself, and I go to the supermarket, and the supermarket has all these aisles with these big signs over each one, and it's labeled, you know, aisle one, aisle two, and each sign would say, in this aisle you'll find, you know, pasta and sauces, beans and rice. And I said, so then I'll go inside and I'll see the thing. So I said, is classes the big sign over the aisle? And then when I go inside, the objects would be the individual pastas. And he looked at me for a minute, and at first I thought maybe I said something or the antennas were growing out my head or something. But the man said to me, Katie, that is absolutely correct. It's the most perfect relative example that you could give. And as a matter of fact, I commend you for saying that your learning style is different. In the next class I get, this is the way I will teach them for those that don't understand. So I actually got an A+ in that class, and the thing that made me understand was this was one of the rare teachers that still care about students learning, because a lot of the teachers now don't. Either they're frustrated or they want to, but they're being told that there's certain restrictions now. I know serving on the PTA and the SLT team, I learned a lot of very disturbing things on the inside. Teachers are being told, put away your red pens, don't correct that sentence. I had a daughter that brought me a book report, okay? Now, being a writer, one of my majors is English. And there was a big old 4, which equals an A or 100 or whatever it is that we used to know. Big old 4 with a big old happy face and stars and exclamation points from the teacher. And when I read, and I'm happy, I'm like, oh, wow, beautiful, let me read it. I wouldn't have given my daughter a 1. You understand? Reading this, there were the paragraphs were not formatted correctly. There were run-on sentences. The punctuations were missing. So I asked this teacher, how the hell are you giving my daughter 100% on as a teacher? And I'm her mom. And I'm reading this, and I could barely understand what it is if I didn't have my own brain. Mm-hmm. Are you trying to, like, rush my child through the system? She has to face the real world when she leaves
me. Right.
You know, so you're going to tell my daughter to go fill out a job application and write these sentences where or a future employer couldn't understand what she's saying? And you call that a 4? So that was one of the things I had to fight for at the table. And I got a lot of opposition, as you said before, and I know. Because everybody wants to be comfortable with what's already there, what looks good. But your child is in that system. Your child is in that system. A child that once they graduate, that teacher is going to remember or not remember years down the line. So no one has the right to tell you what a child is not capable of, because if they're true teachers, they're going to know all styles, and they're going to do what they have to do. So I commend you, and I ask for you to keep up what you're doing despite the opposition.
Oh, well, thank you.
We're down to 10 minutes, so let me ask the panelists to say their final thoughts on teen dating violence, and, of course, what you're saying, advocating for children to just be empowered. So I'll start with you, our newest guest, Angela.
Well, that teen dating violence is, if you could instill boundaries in a child in the preteen age between 11 and 13, hopefully that they will not be in a situation where they're involved with someone that will overstep their boundaries and hurt their body, be it a boy or girl. I think it's all about boundaries.
Yes.
Wonderful.
That's my final statement.
Thank you very much. Deacon?
Well, this, like I said, this is a real touchy subject for me because, my goodness. Well, like I said, I lost a niece. Her name was Cregene Bell. That was shot and killed by an ex-boyfriend. And I just want to reach out to the young people that may be out there listening. Like I said before, if anyone is putting their hands on you in a violent way, there's no way you should keep that to yourself. You should be able to go to a family member or a close friend and let somebody know what is going on if you're afraid to address the situation. Have somebody that knows other than yourself, and don't keep it a secret, because before you know it, you're no longer here with us. And that's if you love someone, there's no way it's supposed to hurt. There's no way they're supposed to hurt you like that if they really, truly love you. And that's my last word.
Thank you, Deacon. Lady Diamond.
Well, what I feel is that teenagers is not love. For teenagers, it's not love. It's what we call puppy love. And puppy love is not a long-lasting thing. Most of teenagers do not understand that. They think it's love and love is forever and yada, yada, yada. But they're young. They don't know what that is. They don't know what love is until it actually happens, until they find that one person. These teenagers have to know the warning signs of abuse. They have to know the warning signs. If they feel that they're in danger, then they are. If they feel that the person that they're with is going to hurt them, then they probably will. So they have to go by their certain instinct. They can't ignore it. We all have our instincts in us. We all have certain things in us that tell us, no, this is wrong. This is wrong and it doesn't seem right. Maybe I should walk away. But then we have another thought in us that tells us to stay. What shouldn't happen? You know, if it's wrong and you feel it's wrong, you know the person's abusing you, it starts with calling the person names, calling the person, you know, embarrassing them in front of family, in front of friends, that's the start of it. They have to know the warning signs, and if they ignore those warning signs, they're doomed. They're doomed for life.
Thank you very much. Okay, Rebecca, I'm going to honor your request. There's a parent that just reached out to me and asked me to please read the poem that I wrote before the first teen violence segment that we had a week ago, and it's called I Love You to Death. And if your daughter Jennifer is listening, I would like for you to please take this to heart. This is things that I've seen and things that I've heard, and this is the feeling that I had the day that all of this came to play. This poem was written in 3 minutes because it was that heavy on my heart. So I would like for you both to listen, and I commend you, Jennifer, for taking the first step to trying to leave your bad situation. So it's called I Love You to Death. It's written by me, Katie Barnett, and it goes like this. My God, this must be heaven, were the words that came to mind when I saw that look in your eyes when you looked at me as if I was the only person standing on the lunch line. If only I could make my parents understand, but they just don't want to see. You could have anyone else in the world, and yet you want me. I know that the bruise on my arm looks real bad, but I know that you wouldn't have done that if I didn't somehow make you mad. My parents kept telling me that what we have isn't love, because if we did, there would never be a harsh word exchanged between us, let alone a shove. But they weren't there when you said sorry. They didn't see the way you cried. And if they had any sense at all, they'd understand how conflicted you were inside. You went through so much just to get me back. You apologized on your, wait, you brought me flowers and apologized on your knees, as a matter of fact. And it was so much better for 3 weeks after we made up that I made a solemn vow to never let anything break us up. You have been by my side everywhere that I go. You even get upset when I went somewhere and you didn't know. You see, I got your back. No one understands you like I do. I can even understand why my eye is now black and blue. But what I don't understand is why my parents can't hear me. Why are they sobbing so loudly every time they come near me? And why am I lying flat on my back, looking up at a massive crowd, a crowd of almost all my loved ones, and why are they crying so loud? I struggle to sit up and take a look around. I scream out, "It's okay, everybody, I'm fine," but I can't make a sound. And finally it hits me as I catch sight of my name, carved out on a tombstone that's reflected the love from whence it came. Real love captures your heart. The words "I love you" takes your breath. Real love never hurts you. Love that hurts equals death. That Amen. Is for all of you teenagers out there who think that the jock that's looking at you and telling you to take off your makeup and your mother just doesn't understand them, your father just doesn't like them. Listen, that's bull crap. I'm going to tell you straight up, it's nonsense. If you are afraid to walk, be without this person giving you the approval. Love is supposed to make you shine. Real love, when you're old enough to understand it, is supposed to make you shine. Your body is supposed to be respected until you say it's okay. Love is not supposed to make you walk away missing an eye or not able to walk or hurting at some point physically or otherwise. The person in your life is supposed to uplift you and encourage you and be your complement, not somebody that's your opposition. That's you two are supposed to fight the world together. So if you have a bad feeling about it, if you're second-guessing yourself, if you're wondering if this is what other people go through, it's not love. Your parents were not born alien pod adults. They didn't come to Earth fully grown. They went through the same awkward teenage stage that you went through. They had the zits, the funny glasses. They were poor at one point. They weren't popular. They understand it all. If you got a father with holes in his ear, he used to have an earring. Okay, if he has a hoarse voice, he might have been a smoker. Try to understand that your parents are the first and foremost people on earth that love you. And any questions that you have when it should be smooth sailing means it's something you need to look into. Don't turn your parents away. And as the deacon said, tell somebody. And eventually let that somebody tell your parents and all of you work it out together. Because a good support network in time of abuse, take it from a surviving victim. Take it from a surviving victim, 21 years, and I will tell you this right now. It doesn't get better. It doesn't get better. There's nothing that you could do to make them better because they have the problem. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be trying to change
yourself. I'll testify to that, too. It does not get better.
It doesn't. It doesn't. If they're angry now and you left them and they had to cry over you, they're going to be angrier when they come back. No matter what you do, it's never going to be good enough. Because God didn't design you on this earth to live for others. He designed you to be happy the way he made you. Any alterations that you have to make, not for your personal feelings or your personal satisfaction, means that it's not worth doing. If any of you need to know how far I went at one point from my ex-husband, I will tell you right now, I went so far that I was going to mutilate my body to accommodate some crazy fetish that he had. And still he cheated, and still he beat me, and still he called me every name in the book. So do know that it doesn't get better. And I want to thank every single one of you on this panel. I want to thank you listeners. Rebecca and Jennifer, I commend you. God bless. Reach out to me if there's anything that you need. We keep things confidential here. It's all about empowerment for yourself.
Yeah.
Because if you don't love you, no one can make you feel approved. Nobody.
Amen.
I'm going to go out now. I will see you all here tomorrow at 8 o'clock. The next topic will be posted on Facebook by 4 p.m. So all of you, please, Angela, please continue to do what you're doing because people need you whether they realize it now or not.
Yes.
And I commend you.
I commend what a powerful you. Show you have. That's a wonderful show you have.
Thank you. Please
I'm glad you're there.
Thank you, because we don't want anybody to feel that there's no other way. We really don't.
That's right.
You know, please help us spread the word. And all of you listeners, feel free to like our page on Facebook. I am going to go out to all of you beautiful people out there that's feeling ugly at the hands of a person who doesn't feel good about themselves. R. Kelly with the world's greatest. I will see you all here tomorrow at 8 o'clock. God bless you. Be blessed. Be a blessing. Make a difference. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
I am a mountain, I am a tall tree, oh, I am a swift wind, sweeping the country, I am a river, down in the valley, oh, I am a vision, and I can see clearly, if anybody asks you who I am, just stand up tall, look them in the face and say, that star up in the sky, from that mountain peak up high, hey, I made it, I'm the world's greatest, and I'm that little bit of hope, when my back's against the ropes, I can feel it, I'm the world's greatest. An eagle, oh, I am a lion down in the jungle. I am a marching band. I am the people, oh, I am a heaven hand. I am a hero. If anybody asks you who I am, just stand up tall, look them in the face and say, I'm that star up in the sky. From that mountain peak up high, hey, I made it, I'm the world's greatest, and I'm that little bit of hope, when my back's up against the ropes, I can feel it, I'm the world's greatest.
In the wings of life, I'll rain love,
I will rain.
Walk on through.
On the Edge. Real talk about real issues.